Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's Monday Night Raw at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. A very interesting Monday Night Raw last night, folks. You know, with just a couple of weeks away from Fastlane, there really wasn't a lot of hype about Fastlane or even really any clarification of what matches we might see. So with just really 2 weeks to prepare for it, the WWE had a task ahead of them. And to some extent, I think that they succeeded. This was one of the better episodes of Raw I've seen in quite a while, actually. And it started out with Cody Rhodes hitting the ring. And, you know, listen, Cody Rhodes being involved in this whole Jey Uso thing doesn't really work for me. I never really liked this angle of Cody pulling strings behind the scenes to get Jey Uso back. Well, I don't know what they're talking about. Jey Uso said he quit. Nobody fired him. Nobody said he couldn't come over. So what strings did he have to pull? I'm not sure that makes a ton of sense. But I'm not even sure it makes sense that he would stick up for Jey Uso and try to get him over there. Now, he did say one interesting thing during this monologue, which lasted 4 or 5 minutes before Judgment Day broke it up. He said eventually that SmackDown was going to get a pick. And my assumption is that that could potentially end up being Cody Rhodes himself. That's my assumption. It'll be interesting to see. Or maybe they're going to have a different storyline by which they're going to pick somebody totally different and change the whole entire dichotomy of a feud or whatever. I'm not sure, but my gut tells me it's probably going to be Cody. Anyway, as he's talking, of course, the Judgment Day come out, and after a little bit of jaw-jacking and back-and-forth insults, they decide to hit the ring, and they're going to triple-team Cody Rhodes, to which Jey Uso ends up sliding in the ring to make it 3-on-2 at least. And when the Judgment Day, considering it's 3-on-2, decide it's still odds in their favor, they hit the ring anyway, only to be met by Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. So without even so much as touching one another, the Judgment Day back off, only to have J.D. McDonagh come out with a couple of steel chairs, just two, one for him and one for Finn Balor. And then without consulting anybody else from the Judgment Day, they hit the ring. Dominic right behind him, but not so much Damian Priest, who stays behind and says, wait, wait, wait. And then ends up having to run in a little bit late. And ends up being the last guy in the ring with all of the opposition and gets his ass kicked. So I thought this was pretty well done, actually. Thought they did a pretty good job of this. They set up what was to come. They've given us an indication of what War Games is going to be, haven't they? Now, I think War Games is in November, and I would imagine you're going to see some form of this 4-on-4 at War Games. So that'll be interesting to see. They set up what was coming for the rest of the night pretty well, I thought. It wasn't as though this is anything new. We've seen this week after week after week, especially with KO and Sammy and the Judgment Day. This has been an ongoing thing for a long time. But I think the addition of Kevin Owens not really trusting Jey Uso, but Jey being there anyway. us being very unsure why Cody Rhodes is putting this much effort into Jey Uso, but he's there. JD McDonagh injecting himself when clearly Damian Priest does not want him to interject in any of this stuff has turned out to be a pretty interesting thing. Turned out to be kind of interesting. So I thought the opening itself, Mike, was actually pretty solid.
I thought it was pretty solid as well. And there's some subtle things in there that you say, okay. I mean, that opening is reminiscent of some of the stuff that Bray Wyatt used to do with the Funhouse. That you look at that Funhouse and you say, well, it doesn't make sense, but you look at it closely enough and – you know, each Funhouse had little bitty things that were there. You said, oh, okay, there's that, and there's this, and there's that, you know. The whole thing with the two chairs, if he would have brought out more than two chairs, you would have known something was up. You know, if he brings out
right.
enough chairs for everybody, you know, which is easy enough, you know, then you wouldn't know something was up. But he only brought out the one for him and the one for Finn Balor. You know, didn't even bother bringing one out for Dom. Now, we'll get to
right.
Dom later, but that was a subtle thing. That was a very subtle thing. If you weren't paying attention that and you didn't pick up on that, You said what you said earlier. It didn't make any sense, but the little subtle things is what helps these things make sense, you know?
Yeah, there's definitely something there. There's also something with Cody Rhodes saying SmackDown is going to get a pick for Jey Uso. It's interesting how this could work. I got a feeling it is going to be Cody. But it probably won't be anytime super soon because I think they're probably planning on doing Cody Rhodes, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Jimmy Uso, or Jey Uso, against the Judgment Day, maybe with J.D. McDonagh, maybe with Jimmy Uso. I don't know. They might even throw that into the mix. But something's up. There's definitely something up. So a pretty good opening, Todd. I didn't have a problem with it. It ran a little long, but it set up the night nicely.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, the opening of Raw was not too bad. Not too bad. Not too shabby. It was a pretty decent opening. The one thing I like, and that at least he didn't say, what do you want to talk about? At least he didn't say that this week.
Yes, this week he did not say that. Maybe people have gotten into his ear and said, look, that's getting more annoying than anything else. So maybe that's come to an end. Hopefully it has, because that is annoying. We then get to Bronson Reed versus Otis. Now, I'll tell you, on Sunday we're going to be doing a show about a very interesting topic because a fan had wrote to me and said, have you noticed that WWE as well as AEW and a lot of wrestling are seemingly doing away with what some people might call toxic masculinity. In other words, you don't have a stone-cold Steve Austin character who's just dripping with testosterone. You don't have a Rock. You don't have a Triple H. And he's right. He's absolutely right. We haven't even really thought about it until we start looking around and saying, well, who's the heroes here? Sami Zayn, who's very, you know, he's certainly not what you would call the pain of masculinity, right? He's very quiet and reserved and shy and soft-spoken. And, of course, Seth Rollins, who really, you know, is athletic but certainly doesn't drip masculinity, especially with his outfits. You're right. There's a concentrated effort to take that away from wrestling. We'll be talking a little bit about that on Sunday. But here's two guys who are just two big, huge dudes going at it. And my initial thought was, this is going to be a really, really slow, really, really structured match. It was way better than I thought. It was way better than I thought it might be. Now, I had a feeling that Bronson Reed was going to win. They're giving him his push too late. After he's been beaten by everybody and made to look like he's not good, now all of a sudden you're like, oh, we got to make him look good. Well, where was this push when he first came in? It's a little late now to suddenly, I'm a world beater now. Oh, okay, whatever. But he legitimately was able to pick up Otis. I thought this was way better than people will probably give it credit for two guys that size. There wasn't a lot of rest holds. It wasn't a long match, but they certainly gave it their all. And at least push came to shove, Mike. They gave us a legit conclusion, not a rip-off conclusion. So we are now looking, I guess, at the second push for Bronson Reed.
Yeah, second push for Bronson Reed. And look, this was an old school match. Two big raw bone guys. Yeah, what's his name has all the charisma in the world, does Otis. But these are two big testosterone filled guys that went after each other. And here's what, did you catch what happened after the match? Later on,
yes.
With Otis and what's her name and Kaiser. There's something up there. There's something up there.
Yeah, it would appear that something's definitely weird there. It's not that I'm not happy to see Bronson Reed get a push, because I think that push should have been immediate. It's just that I think it's a little late. And I don't know if people are going to get behind that push and really consider him a world beater when we've seen him beaten so many times. So we'll wait and see on that. I'm not a big fan of Chad Gable dropping to him. I'm not even that big of a fan of Otis dropping to him. But Chad Gable still said, you can go tell your dad, he called him, which was pretty funny, your father. You go tell your father that I'm coming for that belt, which we all know that's where this is going. We all know that's what this is building up to. Last week, having him lose to Bronson Reed was dumb. Really, really dumb. As we said, you could have got to this match and still protected Chad Gable by having Bronson Reed lose after an Otis distraction and then setting up this match to rehab Bronson Reed's loss by having him pin Otis, but whatever. It looks like that's where that's heading. Much better match than I thought it might be. It was pretty entertaining, Todd.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, like you said, with Otis said and Bronson Reed there, and it reminds me of an old school Golden Age era match. Just two big guys going at it. Like you said, there was no hero stuff, and just like a two big guys going at it in an old school match.
Yeah, and it was fun. It was fun enough. We then have Tommaso Ciampa basically cut a promo saying, what's it going to take to get to Gunther? Well, we already knew he has to go through Ludwig Kaiser. Good, solid match, but the WWE is doing one thing too much, and that is this friction among the factions. Every faction seems to have some friction. And that's just a repeat storyline over and over. Oh, is Damian Priest and Finn Balor going to implode on each other? Oh, or is Imperium going to implode on each other? Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens seem to be a little bit off the page with each other, thanks to Jey Uso. Are they going to implode? We don't know what's going to be ending up happening with the Alpha Academy. Are they going to implode at some point? There's too much of this. There's too much of it. At some point, the only way to really solidify a group is to make it look like there's no way in hell anything could ever drive a wedge between them. Then later, if you want to do it, it means more. But when every single faction you have seems to be having trouble, or you're hinting at trouble, that's too much of the lazy story writing. It's too much of the same thing. Imperium on their own is going to mean absolutely zero. I'm going to guarantee you this. If you separate Ludwig Kaiser and Giovanni Vinci, neither one of them is going to do well. Neither one of them. And it's going to hurt Gunther because he's not super good on the mic. So if you separate even Gunther from them, it's even worse. So I think you better take a chill pill on that. You better think hard about what you want to do with that. Because I'm not liking the idea that Imperium's breaking up. Anyway, Tommaso Ciampa has a good match with Ludwig Kaiser. Giovanni Vinci's at ringside, but Gunther isn't. Gunther's watching backstage, which is interesting. And Vinci's distraction, unfortunately, costs Ludwig Kaiser. We know what the deal is. We know that Tommaso Ciampa is just being used as a setup guy for, I guess, another Chad Gable run eventually. Certainly, Tommaso Ciampa's not winning that title. If you're smart, though, I'm begging the WWE to consider this. If you're smart, have Tommaso Ciampa win by some other means, just like Chad Gable did. Count out, DQ, whatever it happens to be. So that you can set up either a three-way match with Tommaso Ciampa, Chad Gable, and Gunther, or you can set up a Tommaso Ciampa, Chad Gable match for number one contendership. Because that's really where the storyline should go. If you just let him pin Tommaso Ciampa and it's just on to the next guy, I think you've wasted some opportunity there. So it's an overall good match, Mike, but I'm not really liking this teasing of the Imperium breakup.
I don't like it either. And I really thought that, you know, that once they brought back Vinci, that those two guys should have went in on a run. They brought him back somewhat after Gunther won that championship, and I thought those two guys should have went on a tear and probably ended up, yeah, you wanted Owens and Zayn holding those championships, but probably should have ended up with those championships at some point. That would have made Gunther look even stronger. Imperium would look unstoppable and stuff like that. Yeah, they gave it to they'd eventually lose them to the Judgment Day, but again, it would make them look stronger. And that father, when he said go tell your father, that plays right into we know what the Imperium is, right?
Yes,
it's the whole thing. It's the whole thing. Is well, I don't want to say it, but it's Nazi, right? That's
right.
What,
yeah.
That's what it appears to be. It's basically what's his name from the 70s of goose-stepping Baron
von
guy Rothschild. From the 70s. And, yeah, that's who it is, you know. And basically, you look at what they're doing with what's her name with Otis's so-called girlfriend right now. She's blue hair, blonde hair,
yeah,
blonde hair and chick, right? Think about it.
Yep. Yeah, it's definitely playing into that. And that's why I say I hope they don't break up. Because if they did have any ideas of putting Maxxine Dupri in with Imperium, keep them together then. You know, if she's going to be the quote-unquote Eva Braun of this faction, I'm okay with it. But you can't have this Giovanni Vinci and Ludwig Kaiser feud unless where it's going to lead is Kaiser's still going to stay and they're going to introduce somebody else and Vinci's just going to go out on his own. If you want to do that, maybe Vinci can go out on his own and do something. But if you're going to separate them all, I think that's a huge mistake. I think that's a really huge mistake and they better reconsider it. Now, Becky Lynch had an interesting exchange. Again, this episode was filled with little hidden innuendos, as Mike was talking about with the Bray Wyatt funhouse type innuendos. And here's another one that maybe a lot of people did not catch. Becky Lynch literally told Tegan Nox, I saw you behind that curtain, and I knew you were going to be the one to answer the challenge. How come you didn't? And she said, well, you know, Natty came, and she's a veteran, and this, that, and the other thing. And she said, you can't do that. You cannot allow these people to do that. You've got to stand up for yourself. There is a tiny little bit, and I don't think I'm reading too much into this. Hear me out. There's a tiny little bit of this that's making me think that Becky Lynch just wanted to win the NXT title to prove she could. And now she's looking to unload it. And she wants it to be to someone who's up and coming, not a veteran. In other words, Becky Lynch is handpicking her successor because she wants to go on to something bigger. She doesn't want to be NXT champion. She wants to give another girl a chance to be that NXT champion. That's the way it's looking. And it looks like maybe she's picked Tegan Knox. So that's just another little interesting sideline of that, if that's the case. Anyway, Ciampa goes on to victory. As we said, it looks like next week or whatever he's going to face Gunther. So we have Natalya versus Tegan Knox. Very quick match. Very quick match. Natty's basically relegated to doing this, which is building people up. But I don't know if a match like that, that quick, Todd, really builds Tegan Knox up all that much. But it's been forever since we've seen her on TV, so I guess that's a good thing.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about this whole thing with Tegan Knox and Becky Lynch and everything. You know, like you said, I think you're going to see Natalya and putting these other females over with Becky Lynch and have them prove themselves to be contenders for the NXT Women's Championship.
Yeah, it almost appears to me, Mike, like that's what Becky Lynch is doing. It's trying to find that next NXT-type girl or whatever that's going to lead the pack because she particularly isn't interested in remaining the NXT champion. At least that's the rub I'm getting.
Right. I mean, and we knew that because, you know, of what we said earlier about this was the only championship that she's never held, right?
Right.
Is the
yep.
NXT championship. So now that she can say that she's held it, now she's looking for the next person up that's going to be, you know, we've seen Asuka do it. We've seen Io do it. We've seen, you know, Rhea Ripley's done it. And after they come right up and look at them all, right? So yeah, this is she's, and look, they don't know whether or not, and look, she's Tegan Knox may not be the one she's gonna do this to because Tegan Knox has a history of getting injured, right?
Right.
So this may just be what's the term I'm looking for? Misdirection.
Yeah, red herring. But you see, the thing is, I think the whole idea behind it, and I'm not saying she's looking to throw the belt. I'm not saying Becky Lynch is looking to unload the belt. I'm saying that Becky Lynch's gimmick, or at least the storyline, the way I read it is, Becky Lynch did what she wanted to do. She succeeded in winning the NXT championship. Now she wants to get back into the WWE picture, and she is looking for that up-and-comer, hungry enough to really take it from her so that she can say the NXT belt's in good hands. That's what I get from it. So we'll see where that goes. Again, I don't think it's going to be Tegan Knox either. I think the storyline's going to play out a little bit more. I don't think it's going to be Tiffany Stratton either. I don't think she's getting it back right now. I think she will. Now, here's the interesting thing. I found out that Tiffany Stratton was supposed to be Maxine Dupri. That's exactly where they were heading with that. She was going to get called up to be Maxine Dupri, and then they changed their mind. So that's interesting, meaning they must have some much bigger plans for Tiffany Stratton. So we'll see about that. Seth Rollins hits the ring. This might have been one of Seth Rollins' worst promos. He acted as though he wasn't really sure what to say. He acted a little disinterested. Something was off last night. And he basically said, "Oh, my back is my strength because even though it's broken, nobody wrestles with a broken back. Yeah, you don't wrestle with a broken back, so your back is not broken. It's silly to go out there and make a man say I'm wrestling with a broken back. An injured back is one thing. A broken back is ridiculous. And that's my strength because it forces me to do." This was a bad promo. I'm sorry. Whoever wrote this was a bad promo. It was so ego-driven, and my family loves me, and I love them, and this is way over the top bad. Way over the top bad. And it was unnecessary, by the way. All Seth Rollins had to do is come out there and say, hurt back or not, I'm still the champion of this federation. I still have an obligation to defend this belt. You can come out and give me all of my weaknesses. You can come out and tell all of my opponents what my weaknesses are. But why don't you start trying to tell them what my strengths are, Shinsuke? Because I've already beaten you once. That's all that needed to be said. We didn't have to drag in, oh, my family, and that's my strength. It's really like pandering, and I didn't like it. This probably was my least favorite Seth Rollins promo I've ever heard him do. Nakamura did his, and you had to have the subtitles because he did it in his native language, and, you know, it's effective, but they said, I want you in a last man standing match. Okay, well, I mean, it'll be a good match and all, but I'm just not into this feud. I'm just not, because nobody in their right mind thinks Shinsuke's coming out of it, you know, winning. Too much damage to Shinsuke Nakamura to ever rebuild him this quickly. If you did want to rebuild him, this should have been 3 months down the road, where Shinsuke is literally taking the heads off everybody for 2 and 3 months. Because right now, going from I'm dropping matches to everybody on the roster to I flipped heel and now I'm going to be the champion is a ludicrous stretch. So I don't give this segment that high of marks, Mike. I think this was a weak one.
I liked it well enough, but if his back was that much of a problem, we would have gotten something like Shawn Michaels, I've lost my smile, you know, because that's what happened, remember? You know, you go back and you watch that whole situation with Shawn Michaels. He wins the championship, and then, what, a couple weeks later, he comes out and says, my injuries are this, that, and the other, and I've lost my smile, and I've got to go away, so therefore I've got to give up my title, right?
Right.
But we got that because his back was really that bad, right? Shawn Michaels' back was really that bad. If Rollins' back was really that bad, we would have got that. We would have got something.
Besides that, you know, I don't see Rollins as the character. I don't see Rollins as this character comes out and says, my back is broke, and my family is trying to tell me to stop, and I know I love them, but I'm going to... I don't see him as a whiner. And last night you made him a whiner. Last night you made him like a little emo whiner, and I don't think that's a... Again, when a character does something out of character, then I don't like it. And I could see Seth Rollins going out there and saying, hey, Shinsuke, yeah, I have some weaknesses. Yes, you know, I've wrestled for a long time. You know what your weakness is, Shinsuke? You've grown soft. In Japan, you were a legend. In Japan, you were feared. And here, in the WWE, you're a comedy act. You never achieved a damn thing in the WWE that you were supposed to, and you know it. And it's eating away at you. And you're looking at a guy like me saying, how come I can't be him? So there's your weakness, Shinsuke. You can't live up to your hype. That would be awesome because then we'd say, wow, this is getting personal here because it's kind of true. Instead, they just go with the poor, poor, pitiful me routine, and I do not like it. I did not like this segment at all. Anyway, Dominic Mysterio defends against Dragon Lee. This match was the match that made Dominic Mysterio legit. Let me tell you why. You couldn't have handpicked a better opponent, by the way. Could not have handpicked a better opponent, and I'm sure that's what the WWE actually did do. They handpicked a guy who they knew was going to make Dominic Mysterio look way, way better than he actually really even is, and he's better than most people think. Dragon Lee was fantastic. He did his job 100% fantastic. That crowd popped huge for a guy they didn't, a lot of them didn't even know. You got to remember, a lot of these guys don't watch NXT. So when he came out, they're like, Dragon Lee, who's that? Well, he showed you who he was. And within a short period of time, the crowd was chanting, this is awesome. When's the last time you heard a crowd chant, this is awesome, in a Dominic Mysterio match? The WWE clearly realized Dominic Mysterio's weakness is a lot of people are saying he's not all that good in the ring. Yeah, the fans hate him and they boo him when he tries to talk. Yeah, he has that smug attitude down pretty well. And yeah, the Judgment Day is a big deal and Rhea Ripley's a big deal, but he's just hanging on their bootstraps because he can't really get it done. Well, they proved different. Last night, they took him out there and they proved that's not true. He can get it done. And they did it without the help of the Judgment Day, which was a really good idea. Really, really good idea. And they let him have the time. That's another really good idea. It wasn't 5 minutes and out. They let this thing breathe, and there were some excellent moments in this match. When this match was finished, I said, I don't think you're going to top that tonight. I really don't. And I got news. They came close. Came pretty close with a couple other matches. But this was Dominic Mysterio's I Have Arrived match. This was it. And the funny thing is you could tell he knew it because you could see the look on his face when the fans were chanting, this is awesome, probably for the first time in a match that he's involved in at least one-on-one. And I said to myself, this is exactly what the WWE wanted. They handled this perfectly. Dominic, with no Rhea, with no Judgment Day, defeats Dragon Lee clean on just his own merits alone, making him legit. You have now legitimized Dominic Mysterio. And that was one of the most important things you needed to do. So, Mike, I thought this was a stellar match, really, all the way around.
It was a stellar match, and there were a couple of spots where, you know, he's supposedly the heel, and he did the whole thing with the tying of Dragon Lee's mask to the ropes and all that stuff. And you know, I believe Dragon Lee spiked him with a DDT on the ring apron, I think it was Dominic that did that, but whatever. But that was a great spot in that match, and it's like, these two guys, I've never seen them together. Apparently they have excellent chemistry. So, and that's the thing. And again, Dragon Lee is not your typical. He didn't do a whole bunch of the high flying moves. Yeah, and I guess he could afford to not do that because Dominic's not that big a guy. I mean, he's tall, but he's not that big a guy, you know, so he can do a little power and stuff like that with him, but it wasn't your typical, you know, Rey Mysterio, Dominic Mysterio, lucha match, right? It wasn't that typical match like that.
No, they handpicked Dragon Lee to do this. Someone backstage, I guarantee you, said, we need to legitimize Dominic. Who do we put him in the ring with that he can put on a really, really solid match with that he can win clean and help to legitimize his character? And that the better guy. They had it nailed down. Dragon Lee did his job very, very well. Dominic Mysterio did his job very, very well. And at the end of the day, I think you have now brought Dominic Mysterio's character into the next level with this match. So this match accomplished everything it was supposed to, Todd.
I'm absolutely right there. Like you said, this match last night with Dragon Lee and Dominic Mysterio, it was a pay-per-view quality match. The move
it really
they
was.
Did, it was excellent, amazing. It was better than Sin Cara.
It was, and I got news. Dragon Lee may have solidified himself on the main roster. If he can put on these type of matches, how many people do you know make their Raw debut to chance of this is awesome? Think about that for a minute. It's the first time a lot of these people have ever seen him. And they still got the this is awesome chance. That's very telling. So the powers that be in WWE, they look at Dominic, they accomplished what they wanted, but they also have to take a look at Dragon Lee and say, wait a minute, this guy makes his debut and he's getting this awesome chance. Maybe we found another guy that can get through to the fans, and maybe he can do it. His English is good enough. His moves, Mike hit the nail on the head when he said Dragon Lee is a mixture, really. He doesn't have to do and doesn't strictly do lucha. He mixes lucha with a more American-style wrestling, much like his mask. Did you notice his mask mixed like, you know, the Mexican and the American flag and thing? He's a mixture. He actually has potential, a lot of potential. So maybe they've killed two birds with one stone here. You've legitimized Dominic Mysterio, and you may have just found a future, you know, at least high mid-carder or lower main eventer. So good for them on that. We then get Nia Jax coming out for an interview. I don't know what to say. I was hoping that the time off, being let go and everything, Nia Jax would focus herself a little bit more and try to strengthen up her weaknesses and, you know, do a little bit of self-evaluation. I think she's gotten worse. I actually think she's gotten worse, and that's not easy because she was always crap on the mic. But, oh, my God. I really said to myself, has she forgotten, you're to say? She's literally in the ring saying, Michael Cole, I am Nia Jax. The baddest human being on the planet. What are you reading that off a napkin on Michael Cole's desk? What the hell? Could you put a little bit of effort into it? Just the tiniest little bit of effort into it? I'm already sick of her, and she's been on TV twice. Now, the good news is that when Zoe Stark come out, Zoe Stark lit a fire. Zoe Stark sounded legit when she said, yeah, okay, you beat me up. You also back jumped me. Try doing it to my face. Do it now. She didn't sound like she was reading it off a napkin. She sounded like she meant it. And here comes the match, which is typical Nia Jax. I'm hit with a missile drop kick, and it's like I'm swatting a fly out of my hair. Oh, that's her way of selling. I'll take two steps backwards and lower my head a quarter inch. That's it. That's it. That's my selling. Because I'm too lazy to actually put any effort into actually selling somebody else's move. I'm waiting for the day when somebody just lets her have it. That's what happened with Charlotte Flair. When Charlotte Flair just said, I've had enough, and just let her have it, if you remember that. What can I say? I still think Zoe Stark is a blue chipper. I think Zoe Stark, to my surprise, I thought Zoe Stark's personality was bad. And I said, she's one of those people, she might marginally get over as a heel, but she's never going to be able to be a face because she just doesn't have that whatever. I was wrong. I think she can get over as a face. I really do. Because she comes across as a, you know, I'll take on anybody, I don't care, I'm confident in my abilities type person. She can be the underdog in certain circumstances, which I thought was going to hurt her because she always was like, I'm not the underdog, I'm always more powerful and more athletic. She has potential. Nia Jax, my prediction is this, going to hurt somebody else. Now, she didn't really hurt Rhea Ripley and she didn't really hurt Raquel Rodriguez, but she's going to hurt somebody. Again, because she's gotten no better at all. At all. And I just can't believe it. Interview, if that's what you want to call it, last night, Mike. I literally sat with my mouth open saying, are you kidding? Did she forget what she was saying? Is she trying to read it off a teleprompter? It sounded like Joe Biden trying to give a speech. It was just terrible.
Yeah, it was Yeah, it was terrible. And look, there was a reason why at one point they put her with Lana or CJ Perry. Because we know how good Lana is on the mic. Lana is really, really good on the mic, right? Yeah, at the end, when she was doing the whole thing with Bobby Lashley and some of the stuff that they were telling her to say didn't make any sense, and she probably knew it, and maybe, you know, this, that, and the other. But she's really good on the mic, and I still say she, what's her name, needs somebody on the mic. Now, as far as what's it called? Yeah, Zoe Stark? Yeah. If you're going to wrestle somebody like Candice LeRae, who's a little small little thing, or what's her name, Alexa Bliss, who's a little small little thing, yeah, guys, you're 250 pounds, and you're going to swat somebody like that away. But what's Zoe Stark's a 5'8", 150 pounds, right? You're
right.
Not supposed to be able to swat somebody that big away from you. Yeah, you may outweigh her by 100 pounds, but still, you're not supposed a woman that big hitting you, that even though you're bigger, you're 100 pounds bigger, you're supposed to go down when a 150-pound woman hits you that way.
At least sell the missile drop kick, for God's sake. At least do that. Holy mackerel. So, Nia Jax is back, Todd, and then she's right back to where she started.
I'm absolutely right there. Like you said, Nia Jax is, man, she was just one of those people just like to hurt people. And it irks me back when she hit Becky Lynch in the face for real.
Well, you know, I don't think she hurt Zoe Stark last night, but the bottom line is she cannot use the mic. And she does not know how to sell at all. And it's just, I don't know. I'm not expecting her to do all kinds of flips and flops for Zoe Stark. But my God. It doesn't matter whether you hit her with a chair or you hit her with a punch. It's the same reaction. I take two steps back and swat my face like a fly's in front of it. What the hell? Who told her to sell like that? Anyway, Miz TV, we get Drew McIntyre. This was an excellent segment, and I'll tell you why this is an excellent segment. We all know Drew McIntyre's heading toward being a heel. But I love the way they are making it appear. And the way they're making it appear is that he gets frustrated with the faces because the faces don't understand his philosophy, which is technically correct. Now, the funny thing is, they're not after Kevin Owens for saying he doesn't trust Jey Uso. The New Day come out and say, well, you know, that was pretty cold, leaving Jey Uso to get beat up. Well, Drew McIntyre's right when he said, well, how many times did he do it to somebody? He did it to you guys. He did it to me. And they said, yeah, well, but he's trying to do the right thing, and the old Drew McIntyre would have supported that and, you know, tried to do the right thing, and you didn't do the right thing. And Drew McIntyre's just getting fed up with The Miz. This is the beauty of it. You say, well, why was The Miz even there? The Miz was there for a very good reason, to get Drew McIntyre so aggravated that when he finally does headbutt The Miz, he's already so aggravated that he's going to take it out on Kofi. In other words, The Miz was the instigator. The Miz lit that fuse, and then it really got Drew McIntyre's blood boiling, and he's like, okay, well, then just get down here and I'll kick your ass. Great match. Kofi still has everything he's always had. Drew McIntyre is a vastly underrated professional wrestler. Vastly underrated. Very, very strong match. I love the fact that Ivar came out and took out Xavier Woods. This is one of the first times I've ever seen the New Day where I was actually like, I don't know, man. I sort of feel like the New Day is wrong. You know, I sort of feel like the New Day is the ones who are being whatever. And Ivar takes, I mean, he just leveled Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. A couple of them spin kicks. Finally, we're seeing Valhalla kind of act the way she's supposed to act. I don't know what's wrong with her husband. I don't know what happened to him. I know he couldn't pass a physical to wrestle the 1 week. He still hasn't been able to. I don't know. But I know that this match accomplished a few things. Remember when I always said a good angle accomplishes more than one thing? Well, this is accomplishing more than one thing. Showing the slow burn of Drew McIntyre in a logical way, because what he's saying does make sense. Also, what the New Day is saying to an extent makes sense. The Miz being in there aggravating Drew McIntyre into probably being a lot rougher with Kofi than he would have been makes sense. Them complaining that he didn't help Jey Uso when he walked away when Ivar's in the ring makes sense. Also, he could say, well, there's two of you and one of him. What's it going to take all three of us to beat up Ivar? So, do what you need to do. All of this makes sense. All of it was logical. It looks like it's going to be leading to a little bit of use of the Viking Raiders, Mike. So I thought this was excellent.
Yeah, I thought it was – everything was logical. You can see where Drew McIntyre is coming from. We all say when the Miz goes, we're going to miss him, right? When he decides to hang him up, we're going to miss the Miz. Because when he's allowed to do his job, he does his job really well. And everybody knows what that character is. They know what the Miz's job is, and they buy into it. It's very logical. It's everything, Everything about this whole situation, from Miz TV to the match itself, was logical. And his reaction to the Miz was also logical. Oh, I'm getting frustrated. You're frustrating me. You're annoying me. Okay, I'm going to headbutt you. I'm going to give you a Glasgow kiss. That was a logical
reaction. And here's another subtle thing, Mike. Did you notice this? Did you notice that last week they lost the match because Kofi was distracted? Or was it Kingston? Or was it Xavier? This time, Drew McIntyre wasn't distracted. When Kofi got distracted, it was, okay, I'm just going to hit the Claymore. I'm not going to let these people distract me. There's that little subtle thing that, well, I keep myself focused on the match. You guys don't. You guys are clowns. I keep myself focused on the match. I don't know if this is going to be enough to turn Drew McIntyre full heel, because there's a lot of people who will say, he's absolutely correct. But you're going to have to do more than that. But when he does turn full heel, he's going to have the excuse. He's going to say, I came out here and did the right thing. I came out here and said, Jey Uso's done a whole bunch of bad things, and I'm not going to be the one to save him. I'm not going to be the one to forget it. I'm not going to be the one to brush it aside. And everybody in the back that I thought were my friends turned on me for a guy that has beaten them senseless I don't know how many times and gang jumped them. And then at least I thought the crowd will be on my side. At least I thought you people would understand where I was coming from. If they didn't, and you turned on me. So to hell with all of you. That makes some sense. In his perspective, that makes some sense. So I'm looking forward to this, Todd. I think Drew McIntyre as a heel could work, but I still think he's going to be one of those heels some people root for.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, this is probably a Drew McIntyre not staying the face, not going heel. I think this is going to be like a neutral Drew McIntyre turn, like 50-50 here. Like
if they do a gray area Drew McIntyre, I would be up for that. I'd be up for that. Anyway, we get to the main event, the Judgment Day versus Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn for the title. This should have been boring because we've seen it a million times. We've seen every single type of machination involved in this match, every possible combination of this match. But what made this match good, other than the solid wrestling, was it was a chaotic ending. Just chaotic. Everybody shows up. Dominic shows up toward the end. Then Jey Uso showed up to try to neutralize Dominic. JD McDonagh showed up to try to neutralize Jay. Cody Rhodes showed up. a huge brawl broke out. This is sort of like a dusty finish, as they say, with everything going on at once. It was a little, you know, it's overbooked, as they say, but at the same time, JD McDonagh knocking out Sami Zayn leaves the audience with the, did Damian Priest see that? And if he did see it, what's his feelings now, as opposed to earlier when he said, you'll never be joining the Judgment Day? So there's another branch on the tree. We're still not 100% sure. See, here's the thing that gets me. And I know it's a long shot, but again, if you wanted to, let's say for the sake of argument, ever turn Cody, it's never been explained why he is so adamant about protecting Jey Uso. What kind of stock does he have in Jey Uso? Why? Maybe because Cody thinks it's my way out to get to SmackDown or something else. There could be some storyline there because it seems like there's this unnatural – their paths never really crossed that much except when he was fighting Roman Reigns. And all of a sudden, Cody Rhodes is so invested in Jey Uso, he's not even talking about himself. He comes out every week to say, Jey Uso. There's got to be a reason for that. And I think it might lead into a larger storyline. At least I hope it will. So, yeah, Mike, I thought this match was a really good main event. I thought it left us with a little bit of a cliffhanger as far as, does Damian Priest realize what happened? Will he eventually realize what happened backstage? Does this change the JD McDonagh thing? If it does, are they now going to say, well, that's enough members, so we don't need to worry about Jimmy. We don't need to worry about anybody else. There's a lot to this, so I think leaving it on this note was actually pretty strong.
Yeah, leaving it on this note was really strong. And the kind of dusty finish when it involves his son was really cool. All right. And three, I know the show doesn't think too highly of Jim Cornette at times, but he'll do this thing called guest the program, and he'll talk to this. And one of them was about a show, and he said, "This is how they would do things back way back in the day. They would have the bad guys, you'd have the bad guys and the good guys, and the bad guys would win by hand on the ropes or something like that. And each time it was a bullshit ending, but the bad guy would win. That's how you keep a feud going, right?" And once right. the good guy wins and wins clean, everybody moves on, right? So this is
right.
– we've seen this match before with these two teams, and each time it's a different ending. But each time the Judgment Day, who are the heels, keep winning. So once we know at some point that Kevin and Sammy are going to get these titles back at some point. So once that happens and it happens clean, then that's when you're going to see, you know, the cracks appear in the Judgment Day again. That probably won't happen until they decide it's time for Rhea to come back, you know, because she's just there. They're having her sell the injury by Nia Jax and stuff. So and if there's a rib injury and all that stuff, rib injuries generally take a long time to heal. You can't really, you know, if it's a true injury, you know, all that stuff. So they're having to sell this injury to sell Nia Jax, right? So
well, we'll see if
so
they get her back for Fastlane. That'll be the key. Will they get her back for Fastlane? Some people are saying yes, some people are saying no. I still say somewhere in this future, JD McDonagh and Finn Balor are going to be the tag team champions. Something's going to happen with the Damian Priest thing. The two chairs, the always coming out doing this, that. Something's up. I don't know how they're going to get to it, but something's up. And I will say this, too. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that you are heading toward Nia Jax, Rhea Ripley. And if you think that's not going to flip Rhea Ripley, You're crazy. No one's going to root for Nia Jax against Rhea Ripley. So now you've got yourself a problem. And the problem is, what are you going to do when Rhea Ripley is being cheered and the rest of the Judgment Day is being booed? How are you going to promote Rhea Ripley as a heel when you got Nia Jax as a bigger heel? This is a problem they're going to have to deal with, Mike, and this is why I think we might be in the last chapters of this Judgment Day story. I got a feeling they're trying to get people heading in different directions for a reason. I think they see the longevity of this is probably starting to fade.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And like I said, depending on when Rhea comes back, I mean, they're starting to turn down Dom's mic, right? To have the boo, because generally speaking, the boos are starting to get weaker. They're still there. They're still strong for Dominic, but they're starting to get to where if the mic's turned up enough, he can talk over them, right? So they're having to turn his mic down to have the boos be louder than him. So at some point, it's going to get to the point where they're not just going to turn the mic down. And at some point, they're going to turn Dom face at some point. Now, it might not be soon, but it's going to be at some point, right? And
I think it'll be somebody else before him, but Dominic has, he has the potential a year from now to be a face, but Rhea Ripley, it's right away. If Rhea Ripley comes back and Nia Jax challenges her, everyone's going to be on Rhea Ripley's side. I don't know how you're going to work that. I really don't know how you're going to work that. It's going to be very interesting to see what the hell they're going to do with that. Very odd. Anyway, that's the show in a nutshell. There were some things I didn't like. I didn't like the Seth Rollins promo. A couple other things. And the Nia Jax thing was just, wow. The Nia Jax thing was bad on a lot of levels. But aside from that, this was a really strong show, I thought. You got three really, really solid matches. Kofi Kingston versus Drew McIntyre was very solid. The main event was very solid. Dominic and Dragon Lee stole the show. Absolutely stole the show. The opening was strong. The finish was strong. There's a couple nice little innuendos, branches on the tree, as we call them. So I think this is a strong show. So I'm going to give this a pretty strong B+. I think it was a pretty strong show, Todd. What's your rating?
I'm going to give it a B+, too. Like you said, it was a pretty strong episode of Monday Night Raw last night.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It wasn't that far away. It was Nia Jax's spot gets cut away from being an A-, Mike. So it was a strong show, I thought.
Yeah, I think it's a B+ as well. I mean, I love what they're trying. I love what they're insinuating with Maxine Dupri. I love the way this thing is going, because it could go either way. Because at one point, remember, by the way, B+ for me as well. But we at one point we thought, you know, we were going to see the whole Maxine Dupri being Otis being another version of what we saw earlier, right? Now, what we're thinking is the whole blonde hair, blue eyed Nazi thing, right? With Maxine Dupri.
If they got the balls to take it there, it could be very interesting. We'll see. We'll see if we're just overthinking it, but it does look, at least they're putting those little doubts in our mind. They're putting those little branches on the tree and saying maybe. That's always a great thing when wrestling does that. Even if it doesn't transpire, it gets us thinking it might, and that's the beauty of pro wrestling. They need to keep doing that. Anyway, we'll be back here on Friday with the weekly wrap-up. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.